Welcome to Heaving Bosoms, the podcast where two best friends recap romance novels while wondering about summer camp romances and calling each other out. HBs. Happy sixth night of Hanukkah to those who celebrate. And to everyone looking forward to New Year's Eve this week, happy Western New Year. If you haven't yet, send in your reading embraces. And remember, it's an embrace, the opposite of a reading challenge. One time, a listener completed the entire embrace with the movie The Mummy, and it's still one of my favorite things that have ever happened. You can email, DM, tag us in a post, get in the Discord channel, or use the spreadsheet that we have in the Facebook group. Then we can embrace you in our episode on January 13th. This week on the bonus feed, we're recapping Dreams of a Dark Warrior by Cressley Cole. It's finally time for Regan the Radiant and the newest reincarnation of her fated mate to cross paths. Except he's currently the most feared soldier and chief torturer in an organization of mortals who are hell-bent on exterminating immortals. We really didn't know how Cressley Cole was going to write her way out of this dynamic, but not only did she manage that, we also got so much time in Lothair's head. It was fantastic. That's this Friday on the bonus feed. This week, we're diving into another holiday romp with The Matzo Ball by Jean Meltzer. Here we go. Sabrina, I got the best present the other day.
That's ominous as fuck.
So we had some of our best friends over for hot pot and holiday gift exchange the other night. And my gift, because I don't know, everybody jokes about my butt. My family, my friends, whatever. And then remember when I went to the Korean spa with my friend? This was the friend. And so during that Korean spa visit, it's like fully naked all the way, you know, for it's mandatory to be naked. And so we were sitting in a hot tub at one point, and she was like, "All right, Mel, I just need you to know it's coming from a not weird place, but the reports are true. That is a juicy peach." And I was like, "Wow, that's hilarious." So for holiday times, she gave me...
You were talking about at the watch party?
Yeah.
Okay.
She gave me this like little gift package situation, and it's from like the Sol de Janeiro body care line or something like that. And she was like, "You need to report back on the Brazilian bum bum cream because we gotta pamper that juicy peach." And Michael was like, "I looked at that the other day. I was thinking about getting her something like that." And so I have a cream, a body wash, a perfume, and then she put like high chews and shit in there.
Tushy.
I don't know if it's specifically for my tushy. I think that's more like the Brazilian, you know, section of it and not the bum bum section.
I think it's better.
Yeah, I could probably use it like poo-pourri, right?
Like, except you put it directly on. Oh, you're thinking like in the toilet.
Yeah, obviously. I don't put poo-pourri on my person.
I know, but that's because that's not what poo-pourri is. Oh my God. I worked for a Kirkland's. I was an ASM at a Kirkland's for a hot minute when I was younger, and they sell poo-pourri. And I had such a vendetta against it for so long because of it. Because we opened Black Friday. Like, our opening week was Black Friday. It was a brand new Kirkland's. And I remember so vividly it was within the first like 2 weeks that we had opened.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a woman coming in and we were sold out of Poo-Pourri. I don't know that I have ever experienced the rage of a Karen.
She Karened about Poo-Pourri.
She Karened about Poo-Pourri because the other Kirklands on the south side of town was fucking out of it.
Stop it.
And every single time I saw Poo-Pourri for like 8 years,
mm-hmm.
all I could think about was her. And I was like, I will not use Poo-Pourri. I don't fucking care. And then I did use it for like the first time. And I was like, oh, that is very nice.
Hey, pro tip listener, you can just put drops of essential oil in there. And it's the same thing as Poo-Pourri. So there you go. I wish that bitch knew that. You know what I mean?
Pro tip. Yeah, it was just unhinged, you know?
Wow.
It's the holiday spirit, you know? It fills us all differently.
Yeah. Well, I just am really glad to know that I have friends who understand the treatment that my juicy peach deserves.
Your bum-bum as much as they do. They're taking care of that bum-bum.
Isn't it so nice?
That's best friendship status, right?
Like, yeah, for sure.
Like, only a true friend cares about your bum as much as, if not more than you do, you know?
Yeah.
Like, okay, would you have bought bum-bum for yourself, Mel?
No, never. Also, your holiday package went out yesterday. Or was it today? I think it was, it was maybe today. Oh, wow, I can't remember. I legitimately can't remember if it was yesterday or today.
cookie,
oh, wait,
cookie,
it's Monday,
cookie.
Isn't it? It was today. There's also just an extra little bauble in there for you, FYI.
A bauble?
Just a little bauble, yeah. To go along with your cookies.
A little boobly bobbly. You're starting off male person in 2025 hot and early. I'm impressed. That was one of our things for next year, is we're going to be better about mailing each other things.
Of the two of us, you're really the only one who has to work on that in a serious way. I've actually sent you quite a few things in the mail.
That was quite the public call.
Quite
out.
Honest. I've sent you at least four packages that I can think of. Three or four.
It's been a few.
It's been four. I've gotten exactly zero from you. So.
You're going to get a post-holiday card from me this year.
Whoa, that's really exciting, honestly. I can't wait to see that art. Oh my God.
Oh my God. All right. Anyway, so listener, this week we're doing the matzo ball.
But
Happy
before
Hanukkah.
We do that, we're going to shout out some patrons, because we have some people who are amazing and they've just joined. Some other ones have supported us for years and years, and we're just grateful for our Patreon community. So, hey, thank you so much for coming to our Patreon party, Lisa C. and Leah.
Sarah K. and Hannah C. B.
Sherry P. and Jennifer C.
Jody and Molly M. W.
Brenna B. and Liz.
And Andy and Harmony M.
Hey, thanks for coming to Patreon.
How many Harmony and Melody jokes have you gotten in your life, Melody?
I mean, no less than 3,000, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
I said
it's roughly there.
Okay. I was just curious.
In college, people used to say that that when I was blackout drunk, I was my evil twin Harmony. So
that's
there was that
funniest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, from here on out, if you are ever, as far as I'm concerned, acting out of character, you're Harmony now.
You're
That's
Harmony.
The funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. Yeah. Your evil twin is named Harmony.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh my God.
All right, we're fine. We're fine. Everything's okay.
That's, you know what?
I'm
going to
be
we're greasing
about
the wheels
that.
Over here. We're great.
I'm going to be giggling about that at random. Oh. Boy.
Okay, so we're doing The Matzo Ball by Jean Meltzer, and this was a little cutie pants.
It was a little cutie pants. there was a lot of horny conversation in her head for a book that had no sex.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of nice. I liked it.
Really? I like every time she was like, I'm going to climb that man like a tree. Look how sexy he is in those pants. I wonder what he looks like out of them. And then at the end of the book, I was like, what does he look like?
I went into this knowing that it was closed door at most.
Oh, I had no idea.
I went into it. Okay.
I had no idea. All right. And so, like, I was like, we got to the end and I was like, it's over. Okay. All right. And it was fine. I don't have a problem with closed door romance, but like her internal monologue was like, I wonder how big that dick is.
Okay. It's
I'm going to climb that like a tree.
Sabrina fanfic.
That's how it came across. It was like, I'll bet he's well endowed or like.
Yeah. But she does very clearly and succinctly identify him as a sexy man many, many times.
Many times. Yeah. So in this book, listener, we have Rachel Rubenstein Goldblatt, and she is the daughter of like
the most famous rabbi ever. Yeah. In New York City. They like fly him other places to do rabbi stuff. Everybody knows him. Uh-huh. He's the guy.
Like, because of it, she has a lot, like there's a lot of expectations on her as any child of a well-known whatever in a community. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how it is.
Well, especially in a religious community.
Yes.
What does Naima... Naima calls herself a PK, a preacher's kid.
I forgot that she's a preacher's kid.
I know, right?
That's wild to me. Listener, if you've read any of books.
Naima Simone, go check it out. Highly recommend.
Yeah, highly recommend. That is not a closed door, listener.
No. Actually, she just had a book come out, and it's called Church Girl. You know, if you're interested in that specifically, she just wrote something for you.
That sounds delightful.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, Rachel Rubenstein Goldblatt is the rabbi's daughter, but she has a secret.
She writes Christmas romances, and she loves Christmas. She hides it in her office like a dirty little secret. And when I tell you this woman loves Christmas more than a lot of people love their children. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a lot. I would struggle. As somebody who doesn't really give a shit about any holidays, I cannot fathom.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny because for her, between her interactions with her best friend and then later on when she figures out that, like, she can't write Christmas romances anymore, we figure out that, like, it's because it's an escape. It's because it's the ultimate thing that she can never access as a very, very Jewish person, as a very proud Jewish person, as a very devoted Jewish person. It's just like this escape that like will never be real for her. And well, so she like, can put it's, whatever it's she writing, wants on
it. It's a fantasy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like she has Hallmark movies to base all of this on, not like life experience. Like at one point in the book, she's talking and the hero at one point, he's like, I know that this is going to be shocking to you, but the whole world is not Jewish. And she's like, I know, but I did grow up very insular within the Jewish community.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was, which was like, this book was fascinating in the sense that, like, I learned a lot. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I learned a lot of, like, Hebrew terms.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really great because, like, we get to watch an entire Shabbat. Like, not just the dinner, but, like, the 25 hours that you need to, like, not use technology and, like, be more observant. So this book was so awesome in that way particularly.
Also, yeah, the voice in this book was so fucking funny. Jean Meltzer is witty as hell.
Yeah.
Like, so there was this one point where, so our hero, this is a second chance romance, listener, from like Jewish summer camp. Okay.
Yeah.
Because she fell in love at 12 years old with Jacob Greenberg, and then he broke her heart and fucked off to Paris as far as she's concerned. Mm-hmm. And she's never been the same since. And she's talking about how she's going to Shabbat dinner or she doesn't want to go to Shabbat dinner, but her mom wants her to go because Jacob Greenberg is back in town and he's going to be at Shabbat dinner. And she's like, I don't want to see him, even if he is a dreamboat, especially not when that dreamboat had the word Titanic embroidered across the bottom of their knitted kippah. And I was like, beautiful. I love
Well, and
this.
That is not about Jacob Greenberg, because justice for Jacob Greenberg on that one. But her mom uses Shabbat dinner. That was the hiking guy.
That was the
rock climber
guy.
Or whatever, the mountaineer person. Anyway, no, but her mom uses Shabbat dinner to, like, introduce her to eligible Jewish men.
Honestly, like, if you're a matchmaking meddling mother, how perfect.
I know, right?
They can't leave.
I know. Talk about forced proximity. Am I right? Yeah.
I'm kidding. And, like, what else are you going to do? It's not like you can fucking open your phone and read on a Kindle.
No, because if they're local, Jacob only stayed because he was visiting. I think if the rest of the guys are, like, even semi-local, they would leave after dinner.
They go home, yeah.
But it's a long event, you know?
Yes.
So anyway, sorry. Here's the deal. I'm going to set up the two MCs and the main conflict for both of them, okay? Here we go. We've got... What is her name?
No, I'd love to hear this.
No. No. Something Rubenstein Goldblatt. I know that. And it's not Margot Cross. That's her pen name to write Christmas. Mm-hmm. Her Rachel. Oh, God. Thank fuck. Wow. Okay. So Rachel is finding out just right now that Christmas romances aren't selling very well, and so her publisher, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, has asked her to write a Hanukkah romance. Mm-hmm. And this is something that just, like, feels completely inaccessible because it's so real, and she can't, like, assign fantasy to it in a way that she can, like... Like, a lot of people write billionaire romance for that reason. Or, like, you know, historical romance. You don't know. You can't
Sci-fi
actually put yourself
alien
there.
Romance.
There you go.
Yeah,
right?
Like...
That's her version. Christmas is her version. So she can't do that anymore. They wanted to write a Hanukkah romance. And
they're not going to even play with the idea of her writing a Christmas romance. They're like, your contract is done.
Right.
Unless you write us a Hanukkah romance.
Yeah. And she's been wanting to, like, kill off this pen name for a while because she, like, she's mega rich. She's a super best-selling author. She's got, like, 4 TV movies based on her books. Like, she's really legit. Margot Cross is a household name, right? But she can't tell anybody in her life. And so she's trying to say that she can afford, like, the ritziest Upper West Side apartment because she's a freelance writer and, like, never giving anybody specifics. And it's like, it's getting tougher as time goes on. So right now she has to write a Hanukkah romance and she's grasping at straws. The second thing is that she feels like writing is one of the only careers that's, like, really accessible to her and really doable because she has what's called chronic fatigue syndrome. And so this chronic illness can take her out for weeks at a time sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And she can't do a 9-to-5 or 40-hour-a-week job. Like, she needs something that works with her and something that she can kind of make her own schedule and all those kinds of things. And so this has been really kind of perfect being an author. And she's really lucky that she had the success that she did. But she's like, what the hell do I do? So, like, I have no choice but to write this Hanukkah book.
Yes.
Because otherwise I lose my career. And then what the hell am I going to do for money for the rest of my life?
Right.
And so she finds out that Jacob Greenberg owns an entertainment company or whatever and does, like, Coachella-esque music festivals, it seems like. I did not understand any of the business side of this book when
he's talking
about how they make money. Okay.
I don't think we were meant to.
Well, he is trying something. He's trying something new, and they're doing something called the matzo ball because he had this, like, spark of inspiration where he was eating Chinese food on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day or whatever, and he was like, what we should have something fun to do other than this. And so he decides to put on this thing, and it's called the matzo ball, and it is the fancy, high-end, classy version of Hanukkah, like, Christmas alternative celebration at the end of December kind of thing.
Right.
The vibe I got.
Yeah. And this is like, this is something that has happened in the Jewish community before. Like, it'll be thrown for very specific singles or like very specific communities, stuff like that. And so he wants to make it like the classiest, coolest, most viral, awesome shit that's ever happened to New York City. And that's his goal, right? So,
yes.
Going back to Rachel really quickly, though. So the CFS is not only, she feels like it makes her have very specific career goals, but she also feels like she doesn't have any room in her life for anything else. So her mom keeps trying to set her up, not realizing that, like, Rachel is completely turned off to any romantic possibility whatsoever. Period, the end. And a lot of it is, it seemed to me, sort of some internalized hatred, you know, about having a chronic illness and seeing the way that people respond to her chronic illness or others, other people's disabilities or chronic illnesses.
Keeps it quiet. Like, nobody really knows about it except for, like, her close friends, her family, and things like that. Like, she actively doesn't tell people about it for a lot of reasons, as anybody who has chronic illness or knows somebody with chronic illness. I mean, like, if it's an invisible disease, especially something, like, she made a lot of comments in this book that are very accurate in the sense of, like, the term chronic fatigue syndrome is so light compared
really
to what
sets you up to just, come on, why do you have to be like that, everybody?
Well, yeah, because it's,
why
basically
name it that?
Like, so, like, my, I have family with chronic fatigue syndrome, like, fairly serious chronic fatigue syndrome. And, like, basically when you tell people that you have chronic fatigue syndrome, they're like, oh, sleepy bitch syndrome. Take some caffeine. And it's like, that's not, that's not how that works.
Or, like right, this is... I'm exhausted all the time, too. But no.
Oh, my goodness.
Nope.
I'm just
It's
so...
different. different things.
Yeah. And so, like, one of her things is she has to prepare herself. So she is decided that she needs a ticket to the matzo ball. Okay. And she has decided that she is going to Shabbat dinner at her parents' house so that she can convince Jacob Greenberg to give her a ticket. She is going to do her damnedest. She has already had a long, exhausting day that she prepared for by just chilling for like 3 days in advance. And she just barely makes it there. She has to take, because she has to take like subways and cities.
She has to take Long Island Railroad. Don't even worry about it. It's a lot of public transit. It's fine. Here's the other thing about these two. We've learned in the way that they've spoken about each other or thought about each other that, like, she calls him her summer camp nemesis. And he basically looks at her like the girl who broke his heart and got away.
And abandoned him.
Yeah. He's doing a bunch of projection from parental figures.
He's got some abandonment issues, listener.
Yeah. He's taking his dad's abandonment and he's putting it right on 12-year-old Rachel. It's fine.
Because they originally met when they were 12 at the Jewish summer camp that we had kind of mentioned earlier. And basically what happened is they started doing little, like, we learned this over the course of the book, but they, like, were doing, like, pranks on each other and, like, got really close and started to, like, fall in, like, 12-year-old love with each other.
And it was, like, a big, they were doing pranks on each other, but that in itself was a prank on the rest of the camp. Because they started, in order to hide the fact that they were actually, like, 12-year-old dating at summer camp. They would, like, hold hands under blankets, and, like, nobody would think that was true because, outwardly, they have this rivalry going on.
Yeah. Well, because she couldn't date. She couldn't openly date at Jewish summer camp because her dad
And I mean, also
Rabbi
she's 12.
Goldblatt.
Right. Yes.
I feel
that's
like
true.
There's lots of little mini romances at 12 years old at summer camp. Honestly, okay, so this is one thing, Melody, that boggled my mind. Listener, so the main conflict in this book is that they fell in love at 12 years old. And then there was never any, like, closure.
So from her perspective, She thinks that he was actually setting her up the whole time to have the rest of his cabin from camp jump out of the bushes and take pictures and make fun of them when she got her first kiss. So to Rachel, this is the boy who ruined her first kiss and, like, you know, summer camp nemesis. Right. Meanwhile, after she leaves camp because she, like, you know, leaves in a pile of tears early, he apparently didn't get the memo that she completely left camp. And so from his perspective, she's the girl who left him standing in the middle of a summer camp dance floor holding a bouquet of wildflowers and, like, waiting to ask her to be his, like, for real forever girlfriend.
Melody, I have to ask you a question.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Listener, for context, these characters are in their late 20s, early 30s or something. They're right around 30. Melody, do you even remember the people that you had?
Absolutely not.
You were interested in people at 12, though, because of your tiny, tiny town situation, though.
No, that's not necessarily true. It was mostly because I was a late bloomer, maybe you would say. Mm. So this was probably this is a middle school camp, right? My middle school camp experience was being a college student for a week. And when my mom sent me with a disposable camera, she was expecting to get back, like, pictures of smiling kids and, like, fun things we were doing. But instead, she got pictures of everything that I had dissected in one of my classes. So she got pictures of, like, me writing my name in squid ink that I had just cut out of a squid or whatever.
Actually, Melody, I just realized something. I would not hold on to it the way that this book seemed like these characters have, but I'm suddenly realizing I went to opera camp when I was 9 and 11 years old.
Okay.
And I do remember the person that I had a huge crush on and following him around opera camp and, like, the attention that was, and I'm suddenly realizing, oh my God, this does track remembering that giant crush at this, like, important thing. I am not hurt over him, but then again, he wasn't my first kiss, you know? So, maybe that would change things.
Well, I remember my best friend at the time's romance that she had at the same camp, and I remember one time attempting to wave at a boy I thought I was cute and making the biggest fool of myself because I was I got so nervous. So okay. I remember stuff like that. But, like, no, there were no great loves of my life until I was, like, in my 20s, I think, you know?
Yeah, I don't even remember his name. I just remember sitting under the trapdoor stage playing cards. And hot. I remember the owner, not the owner, but, like, one of the lead ladies because I didn't go, I skipped a year. Mm-hmm. And the second year I went, she did inform my mother that my quote-unquote love interest, I would be very excited because my love interest was attending once more. And I, like,
your 9-year-old love interest?
I was, unsurprisingly, I get a little obsessed with people.
What?
Okay.
No.
So, like, it's not like it was not obvious that I was obsessed
with
this little
person.
Was this an adult,
though? Was this, a grown-ass adult, though?
She was a grown-ass adult in the sense that as you get older, you realize that your, second grade teacher was probably only 24, you know?
I mean, yeah, yes. But I don't know that I would have remembered a 9-year-old's crush from 2 years ago as an even teenage person. I don't know that I would have my finger on the pulse in that regard or care enough.
Well, so
really,
this will probably also not surprise you terribly, but I made friends with the adults' places more than I did the other children.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I was a child at the
relatable
camp.
Relatable, yeah.
But also, every single one of them knew exactly who I was. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was on their radar as a human.
Yeah.
Beyond child at camp.
Okay. So anyway, this is like a pivotal moment for both Rachel and Jacob. And he is back in New York to throw this thing. And he asks to spend Shabbat at her parents' house because he wants to ask the rabbi to do like the candle lighting ceremony and do a blessing over the matzah ball when it comes time. Because the matzah ball is happening on the eighth night of Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
And getting this rabbi's like seal of approval on things is really, really important in the community. So
yes.
When he gets there, like it's the first time they've seen each other since they collectively broke each other's hearts. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she is being the biggest bitch on the planet? Question mark.
Okay. Okay. So she comes in hot to Shabbat. Okay. So first she shows up like 2 minutes before everything starts. Right.
Yeah.
And so she's coming in hot anyway. And then she promptly is such an asshole.
Especially because we know from her inner monologue that her whole goal at this dinner is to get this man to give her a free ticket or like get a ticket because it's sold out publicly. And so for a person who wants something from this man, she's being real standoffish and like one word answers and like kind of a dick nose. And I was really surprised about it.
Part of it, though, is like her mom does the matchmaking thing of making sure that they are seated near each other, which she asks for that.
Yeah, because Jacob Greenberg's a catch, okay? Every single meddling mama at that event is like, I want to sit near him so I can pitch my daughter, my niece, a couple of my cousin's kids that I can get in front of
Honestly,
him, like whatever.
Take your pick.
Yes.
Jacob Greenberg, like, yeah. You can have any of them, frankly.
You can at least have a shot at them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Let me get you their information, their birthday, their birth time.
Do you need their SSN?
Yeah.
These are our questions for you, Jacob.
These are our questions. Yeah. So she ends up seated near him and he keeps trying to like open the conversation with her. But he's asking about what do you do for work? What do you do? All of these things. And so she's like, I can't fucking tell him this. And the hilarious part is he's not particular. Like, he only recently got back into practicing Judaism after his mother's death 2 years ago.
Right.
So, like, he's not particularly, like, he's not her dad, right? He's not going to think twice, probably. Like, we're aware of that. We're aware that he's going to be like, okay, she likes Christmas. Like, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, she's like, but obviously she can't say anything at
dinner.
But also,
Rachel, you've been doing this for at least, what, 5 years minimum and also living in the Jewish community simultaneously? Like, how do you not already have, like, a rote response?
Yeah.
Like, you've gotten this question 50 times at a minimum, ma'am, and it's coming out of nowhere? Like, you should be better at this. I'm sorry. Maybe it's because Jacob flusters her. I don't know. But, like, if you're going to have a double life, you need to be better at this.
No, I think that she's just not good at having a double life is what it is.
But, like, this, that's, like, no wonder she wants to hang up Margot Cross.
Because she's
Although
bad
she doesn't
at
have
it.
Any other plans. You know what I mean? Like, she has no other...
No, she doesn't.
Ideas.
I have no idea what she was planning on doing. Like,
yeah.
They came out of nowhere, and they did the really shitty thing where they're like, well, you're Jewish, so you can do a Hanukkah book.
Yeah, super shitty.
But, like, ma'am, you're saying that you need something new, but, like, what
but
are you going to do?
You haven't told me about anything. Like, cowboy romance, question mark? You know, like, what are we...
Well, and she's also, like, talking about hanging up Margot Cross, period, and, like, writing under her name.
Yeah. Which is rad. Do that, Rachel Rubenstein Goldblatt.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah. But, like, what do you want to write, though? Question mark.
But also, like,
what are you going to do?
Historicals? That'd be interesting.
That'd be cool.
But, like, you've stated you are incapable of writing anything other than Christmas romance, ma'am. So she's like, about those tickets. And he's like, oh, yeah, they're all gone, except... And then he, like, stands up and he's like, I would like to ask the parents, what are their names?
Rabbi Goldblatt and Dr.
Rubenstein. Dr. Rubenstein. Mm-hmm. I have 2 tickets for you all, and I'm hoping that you'll come and, you know, do the lighting.
Do the menorah
blah, blah,
lighting,
blah.
All the business.
obviously they say yes, and she immediately shuts down. She is upset as hell that there's not a single ticket available. And I'm like, ma'am, this was a long shot already.
Right?
It is like, stated online that this bitch has been sold out for almost a year. Like,
and like, he hasn't hurt you, ma'am. Okay? Like,
she's not a personal
she's
attack,
so
Rachel.
Mean to him after this.
Like, in what world would he? Like, I guess it's because in her head, I think she thinks that she deserves it because he hurt her as a youth, as a child. But like,
but does she say that to his face? No.
No, she doesn't. None of this is out loud.
For sure not.
These are all inside thoughts, Rachel. Man.
It's true. So anyway, by the end of this Shabbat dinner, he tries to like dry the dishes that she's washing and she is stonewalling him hard, like staring out the window, not speaking, not any. It's like she's in another universe to him. And he tries to ask her and she's just like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about and I'm going to bed. But she does that without cursing. But then when he goes to like take a shower that night, she walks in on him when he's shirtless. Ooh.
Oh,
and it's
boy.
A nice, all right?
He's so sexy.
And then there's like a rustle down the hall and she's like, OMG, my mom's coming out. So she pushes him into the bathroom and closes the door. And now they're like chest to chest. Oh, God.
And she like turns off the lights.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's dark now. And that's extra sexy, I guess.
Just
and he's
just
like, what are you doing, you absolute maniac? And
he's like, I think I'm under attack.
Yeah. And she's like, I needed one of those tickets. And like, I need it. So like, you have to give me one. And he's like, why? And she's like, great question. I'm not going to tell you. And I'm going to be really shady about it. I'm going to be really shifty. And I'm not going to tell you. And like, you don't deserve an answer. And it's none of your business. But like,
oh my
give
God.
Me
and
one.
She's a bad liar, too, on top of all
terrible
of this.
At
so
it.
So not only does she have nothing prepped, she's a bad liar. He can see on her face every time she's like, what lie am I going to give?
She just looks off into the middle distance and like can't. And like, you know what, Rachel? That is relatable to me, Melody.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But anytime I try to lie, like I know enough to at least workshop some scenarios. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like this is everything's coming out of left field for Rachel, including but not limited to why do you need the ticket? Rachel.
Yeah. Well, and she won't give him any, like, she ends up giving him, like, some weird, because her first
because her parents are just so infirm.
She's like, they're so old and infirm.
Oh.
And he's like, that's
ridiculous.
Objectively not true, but also, like, I guess I'll go with it. Because he has decided, I don't know if it's, I think it's now, he's like, I'm going to give this another chance. I'm going to give this 12-year-old love affair a second chance. And, like, I can't stop thinking about her already.
And this is what makes me think that Jacob Greenberg is a bit of a closet masochist. Because she has only been mean to him for the whole dinner. And he's like, you know what? I'm such a good person. I'm going to help her still. This is me being a good person. And like, Jacob, good for you. But goddamn. She broke your heart, and now she's just been abusing you. What is making you think
things are different? So he basically is like, okay, fine. If you come volunteer, we set aside tickets for volunteers. And so come volunteer all of the days leading up, which this blew my mind. Come volunteer all of the 8 days leading up to the matzo ball, and you can have a ticket. What if she has responsibility, a job, like...
Do you want the matzo ball ticket or not? What blows my mind about this, and I understand that it's only used for the narrative device, but there is not a single hotel in New York City that is going to let you have all of the ballrooms just at your disposal to take 8 days to set up without it being like the most astronomical price I've ever seen in my life.
Well, especially like they call this the Four Seasons on like Billionaire Row or something like that.
Yeah.
Like this is the already one of the most expensive places in the city.
And, like, if you're throwing the matzo ball on one day, there's, like, a max 3-day setup situation. You know what I mean? You don't get to just hang out in the ballroom for 8 days beforehand. But, like, okay, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay, hang on. But it's not just that single event. Like, there's a whole lead
allegedly,
up.
There are events leading up to it that, like, we are not super privy to.
No, you are correct, Melody. So she agrees to do this. And ma'am, you've been dealing with your CFS for a decade. You are well aware that there's no amount of caffeine, there's no amount of medical stimulant that is going to keep you functional
for that long, especially for 8 days with, like, a really serious volunteer situation. And it's interesting because Jean Meltzer has CFS. And so I loved the fact that the portrayal, like, felt so real. And one of the things that Rachel talks about is the chronic illness calculator, I think it might be called.
Yeah.
And so she's like, you know, I know that if I need to have, like, a 6-hour stretch, I need to spend 2 days, like, saving up energy and, like, getting myself in a place where I can do this thing for, like, 6 to 8 hours
and, like,
or whatever.
I'm not going
to
do this. Like, it's spoon theory. It's, like, you can call it a bunch of different things. And so she doesn't have the prep for that. So
Rachel is doing some, I'm holding on to the ledge by my fingernails, magical thinking. Okay. Because she's like, she's absolutely, I would love to volunteer for the next
optimistic.
8 days.
Yeah.
And I'm not going
to
tell you why.
She wasn't prepared for what? So,
wow, Jacob.
We have some things
is now a maniac. Rachel was a maniac right then. Oh, wait. But then they go to temple the next day. And it's the first time that both of them see, like, the real human, thoughtful, kind, you know, generous, compassionate versions of the other one. And so they go into this, like, this volunteer situation being like, I think maybe we can, like, both of them are thinking, I should just give it a chance. And Rachel, one of the ways that she comes to this decision is she forces a Santa to let her sit on his lap. And it's like,
it's cheaper than therapy.
He recognizes her. So, like, not only has the same guy been being Santa at this whatever in Manhattan, but Rachel is a multi-year pest for this poor Santa. It's great.
And she's just, like, unloading all of her stuff on him. And he's like, okay, but, like, what do you want for Christmas?
Yeah.
And she's like, but, like, listen to what's going on. And he's like, no. We're running out of time. What do you want for Christmas? And she's
and
like,
she says,
I guess a happy ending.
Yeah.
And he's like, awesome. Great. We can do that. Pictures. He just wants her out of there.
So then, meanwhile, another side character that absolutely knocked my socks off is Jacob's bubby. Her name is Toby. It's his paternal grandmother.
This woman is more active.
Wow. Than me.
At 91.
Yeah.
Than I have ever been in my entire life. She is
a world traveler.
Honestly incredible.
Yeah.
She
makes so much arugula that, like, over the course of the book, it sounded so good.
The whole fucking time. I was so fucking hungry reading this book.
Yeah. At one point, she just produces spring rolls out of the mist. You know, like, this is a really good bubby. Anyway, she is like, Jacob, what's your deal? And he's like, I'm thinking a lot about Rachel Rubenstein Goldblatt. And she's like, okay, so, like, maybe you give it a shot. Like, maybe take her to lunch. Maybe do blah, blah, blah.
This Looney Tunes little monster man.
Yeah.
Sir, you are 30 years old. And he's like, you want to know? I know exactly how to get to Rachel's heart. And it's to prank her. And then I wouldn't even call this a prank.
No, this is just torture.
He whips out a ton of matzah from his Bubby's cupboard, and he grabs an old baseball costume. And when I say baseball costume, I mean literally the spherical object that gets thrown around. And he super glues matzah and glitter and purple puffy paint all over it. And then she shows up the next day. Oh, by the way, Bubby, when she sees, she's like, what the actual fuck are you doing,
Jacob,
bro?
I meant like talk to her, laugh with her. And he's like, yeah, this is going to get her. This is going to get her to open up. I'm going to prank her like I did in when I was 12 at summer camp. That it worked then. Why wouldn't it work now? So she gets there. Her name isn't even on the list, okay? And that's not his fault, but it's not impressive to her either because it seems like she's an afterthought.
Uh-huh.
But then he comes over and he's like, I've got the most special role for you, and I'm so excited. He's like, you're a writer, and so you reach people. And she's like, oh, thank God. I'm going to spend the next 8 days like writing copy or press releases or whatever. This is great. If I can sit for the next 8 days, I'm golden. And he's like, no, you get to be the matzo ball. And he pulls out this child's costume covered in glitter and puffy. And it smells terrible because it is a cool 21 years old, you know?
And on top of that, he's worried about losing all this money. His investors are on his ass about, like, you better make us our money back for this whole thing. And then he does this.
It's supposed to be like a high-end, really elite experience. And he pulls out, this man loves an arts and crafts, okay? And he pulls out his sixth grade best.
Yep, it truly is.
He's divulged.
And she's horrified because now she's in charge of handing out schedules and goodie bags and stuff like this. And nobody fucking wants a paper schedule because there's a legitimate app for this event for all of the upcoming things. And so she's
and
having to chase these people.
She's on
and
her
it's
feet.
8 hours on her feet. Oh, my God. And it's awful.
And he thinks it's hilarious. And I'm pretty sure the first day she meets Bubby, but she doesn't know it. Isn't that true? Yeah. Because the first night he invites Bubby to do the candle lighting later on that day, she has gone out to the alley to cry quietly by herself.
Oh, yeah. That is today.
And Toby comes up, recognizes Rachel, and so very stealthily is like, hey, it looks like you might need some nourishment. You want a little nosh? And gives her some spring rolls.
Which I have a question.
Yeah.
How did Bubby recognize Rachel?
I'm pretty sure Bubby is better at the internet than all of these millennials combined. Plus, she's lived in this New York Jewish community for Rachel's whole life.
I guess that's true. That's true.
She's the rabbi's daughter. I'm pretty sure everybody knows what Rachel looks like, kind of.
Okay. Fair.
You know. Anyway, so while this is happening, she like bursts into tears over these spring rolls. And she's like, Jacob Greenberg is the worst person in the entire world.
He's bullying me.
He's torturing me for no reason. And I really thought, like, it could be different this time, but he's still the same mean little 12-year-old boy. And it's great. And then she fucks off. She goes home. And Jacob has the audacity to be like, she didn't stay for my candle lighting party?
Well, yeah, because there's this like party for his crew, which how would she know about it?
How would
firstly?
She know?
Because these people, everybody else here seems to be an employee.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know what volunteers are doing other than this, but she doesn't stay for the party because guess what? She's been on her feet for 8 hours. She's tapped, bro. And he doesn't know that, obviously, but he's all butthurt about the fact that she has left. And he's like, well, fine, I guess that's how it's going to be kind of thing.
And I mean, in her mind, she's like, he's been abusing me all day. No, he's not even going to notice that I'm not there. I am shit on his shoe. You know, like he's not going to care. But she also has to go back and start her new rage inspired manuscript called The Hanukkah Grinch.
Oh,
and it is all about shitting on Jacob Greenberg under a different name.
And
that's
it's
the
not
whole
even
thing.
When we, at listener,
it's like
later
Jason
at the end
Goldberg
of the book,
or something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, at the end of the book, listener, we get to see a little bit of the very beginning of that manuscript. And it is almost word for word written as something in the beginning of the book is written.
Yes.
And like, it is. There's,
it's about the fact that he struts like a panther.
Even in this fictional world, there's no question. Anybody who reads this book, this is
same job.
This is
Same initials. Same all the things. Okay. Same like, event same, I think he's throwing.
Same syllable. It is. Ma'am. This should have stayed in your journal.
She's not this slick is what we're saying. Not. Yeah.
How in the world does the entire world not know? You know what I mean? Like how some people have pen names, but like yeah. We all know.
Sure.
Who you are.
Yeah.
Like, how is that not the case here? So she shows up the next day, and his next big, brilliant plan.
Oh my God.
Is she is dressed as the matzo ball, and she is basically babysitting. She's in charge of a ton of children. And boy, these children need.
It's 30 Dennis the Menaces, basically.
Yeah.
Like,
there are
she's
kids
just
peeing on things. There are kids throwing spitballs.
Yeah. And like, there are rich kids who know that their parents will pay any dollar to get them out of trouble. And the parents are delighted to be away from them, like doing other things in like a different part of the state, question mark. It's wild.
You just left your child at the Four Seasons while you fuck off to upstate New York for like a meditation retreat.
And like, Jacob, how can you try to look me in my beautiful face and tell me that you're good at business when like this is the type of liability you set yourself up for? There are all of these children and
she's
the only caretaker.
There's no way about this. Yeah.
I mean, that's wild.
Especially because you have a history.
Yes. The daycare rules are like six kids to one adult. Mm-hmm. You can't. And I mean, it becomes, quote unquote, like more manageable the older they get. But like, I would not. Oh, my God. This is. There are a lot of events in this book that are like utterly outlandish. And so this shouldn't be one that I latch onto, but like I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was just like, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, so she's about to get attacked by these children. And I have a quote. Please hold.
Also, listener, he's got like this 10-foot menorah that he's had specially made. And it was meant to be assembled by the crew, but apparently his business partner, Shmuel, messed that up and, you know, they don't have anybody to set it up. And so they finally got it set up, like, with their own bare hands. So that's the setup to this whole thing.
And so they're all about to gang up on her and she decides that she's going for broke and leaving. She's like, I'm out. I'm done. I quit. But then she gets stuck in a doorway and as they're coming up to her, she thinks to herself, there were many terrible fates that could befall a person, but today was not the day that Rachel Rubenstein Goldblatt would get urinated on.
Yeah.
And she's like, in her head, she's like, okay, I just need to just do a one hard shuffle and I'll be home free. And then she does. And boy, that matzo ball
costume. She tries to launch herself through a door because the matzo ball costume is wide enough that it can't really get through doors. And it seems like alternately this matzo ball costume is made out of fabric and then other times it seems like it's made out of like just solid styrofoam.
This seems like a hamster ball. It's yes. So solid because she yeah. literally ends up falling down an accessibility ramp and she rolls down it like something out
sideways.
Of a cartoon.
Uh-huh. Like with her head and her feet on either side and just rolling down sideways. And then she bowling
slams
balls
into that menorah.
Yeah.
And it
breaks
collapses.
Everything. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And he's so worried about her and comes to try and get her because in his head, he's like, hearty har, this is just a fun little joke. And in her head, she's like, he literally just tried to murder me.
Right.
Somebody arrest this man.
Yes.
And so she gets up and she's like, you know what? Fuck you, Jacob.
Yep.
Fuck this whole thing. Fuck all of it. I'm done. I quit. You're a
bully. She rips off the costume. She starts jumping on it, stomping on it. Oh, she's so mad.
Which, like, honestly, I understand, Rachel. It would have taken me a little longer to get to this point, but also, like, I would have stomped the hell out of that costume.
Yeah. And so he's thinking to himself, like, oh, wow, this is a bit of an overreaction. And she's like, set yourself on fire, I'm leaving, and goes home. Mm-hmm. And so he's like trying to text her, be like, hey, are you okay? And she's not answering. And he's, like, kind of mad
Whoa,
about it.
Oh, hang. Okay, listener, Melody just makes it sound like he was, like, being a little shit. He was legitimately concerned. He was, like, texting her. He was calling on the hour. He's like, I'm actually, like, worried.
You're right. I was doing it from Rachel's perspective. Because from Rachel's perspective, he is just a lunatic asshole.
Which
is also not untrue.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, she's not inaccurate. But, like, these are, she is a little biased.
Yeah. So then she has her best friend come over. They do, like, the debrief. And then that best friend, Mickey, goes and gives him a dressing down. And he's like, she's sick. I can't tell you any more than that, but, like, she's sick. And he has just, so his mother had MS and then 2 years ago died of breast cancer. And so he's like, you cannot give me just those two words, she's sick. The fuck does that mean? And he's like, cancer, heart disease. He's like throwing all these things out there. And Mickey has the audacity to be like, what? Oh my God, Jacob, you're really like blowing this out of proportion. And he's like, no, stop it. And, like, by the end of the conversation, Jacob deduces that it's some sort of chronic illness that she doesn't tell people about. Because he's apparently a wizard. I never would have come to this conclusion.
It definitely tracks. Because, like, there are... Yeah. And so, because, like, people are not quiet. You know, like, specific chronic illnesses are so invisible. And he's, like, the fact that Mickey is being so... quiet, covert,
cagey about it.
Cagey about it. This is a chronic illness and it's something that is not going to be obvious.
Right.
And so he shows up at her house at 11 p.m. and he thinks to himself, he does think to himself, he's like, this is unhinged. This is too late. And then he says, fuck it, we ball, and knocks on her door anyway.
It's true.
Like, bro.
And then we proceed to have a confrontation in which neither of them say the thing they're actually mad about.
Oh, no. Not at all.
Like, a good three quarters of this book is just them being super pissed off over summer camp and not saying it. So instead, the bottom line at the end of this conversation is, like, she doesn't trust him. He's given her no reason to trust him. And then at the end, he's, like, getting in the elevator. And she says, you want to know why I don't trust you? And he's like, yeah, why? And she says, because you've shown me who you are already or something. And door closed. Nobody knows what that means. Everything is still incredibly opaque.
Yeah. So then we see a scene, which I think that his Bubby
is the best.
Sees in 5D.
Yeah.
Okay. Because he gets home and Toby's like, hey, what's going on? And he's like, man, I just feel so guilty. And, like, I regret doing what I did to Rachel and all these things. And then Bubby whips out. She's like, let's think about this. You're back in New York City for the first time in 18 years. You put her in a costume for the father that abandoned you. Blah. And she starts whipping out and putting together all of these things that would have never even crossed my mind as connected. And then he has...
I Sherlock Holmes'd all of this pretty good. Yeah.
Maybe I didn't register. I didn't. That's
fair.
Just what I'm. This was the last potential Sherlock Holmes of 2024, and I biffed it hard. So, like, I understood some things, but, like, Bubby was whipping things that I, like, just never even crossed my mind as related.
Yeah. Basically, she's saying that, like, you had the idea for this matzo ball the night your mom died. Cool. Like, you're obviously looking to connect more with your Jewish community. You could have done it on literally any surface of this earth. And you chose to come back to New York City, knowing that you would have to get the seal of approval from the rabbi. And, oh, maybe run into Rachel, like, whatever. And then you put her in the costume that your dad, who abandoned you, gave you. It's the last gift he gave you. And, like, all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So he's like, wow, what an idiot I am. Golly. And he's like, I'm going to make it better. Thank you for joining us today. We'll be back tomorrow with part two. See you then. Heaving Bosoms is produced by us, Melody Carlisle and Sabrina Bradley. Editing is done by me, Melody Carlisle. Our theme music is by the incredible singer-songwriter Brittany Fonts, and our art is by the ultra-talented author Kate Pryor. If you like our show, remember to follow us on your favorite podcast app, rate us 5 stars, and leave a review. That one small action is a huge way to help the show. If you want to get in touch with us for advertising inquiries or anything else, you can email us at heavingbosomspodcast@gmail.com. If you want more of us, visit patreon.com/heavingbosomspodcast. You can also find us on Instagram at heavingbosoms, on TikTok at heaving_bosoms, and in our Facebook group, the Heaving Bosoms Geriatric Friendship Cult. See you tomorrow.